Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Matt Jarboe. Welcome back to another episode of Milk Carton Mysteries. Today, of course, is the 12th of January, 2021. And what can I say? The world is on fire, it feels like, especially here in the United States, as we come to deal and learn more about what happened last week in the Capitol. Of course, if you are a true crime enthusiast, you probably want to know about murder in order to not deal with real life. Let's be fair. This is escapism for quite a few of us. It's very fascinating to dive into the details of these events, which is why we talk about it, especially here on the show, and one of the reasons why I enjoy doing it. So, of course, if you like this kind of stuff, and by that I mean you are most likely somewhat pseudo-depraved, a macabre-loving individual, and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I'm not trying to kink-shame any of you out there. Be sure to give this podcast a review on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes, Google, Spotify, wherever you can find it. Siri, I'm trying to get us on Stitcher. Still having trouble with that. And of course, youtube.com/whatisforbidden is the channel you can find the video podcast on, or at least clips of the video podcast. And yeah, all that stuff. Or facebook.com/groups/themilkcarton or instagram.com/milkcartoncast. We're kind of all over the place, I will fully admit. And I think I'm done shilling because you're probably tired of hearing it. You want to get into the weird news. Of course, today we're going to be talking about a woman who went missing. And then, of course, we find out that someone close to her took her out. That's going to be something we're going to discuss. We're going to be talking about a missing persons case about a young man who seems to have just up and vanished after wrecking his car. And the depraved tale of a man who... I don't even know how much of that I want to spoil. It's a fucked up story, guys. This dude, essentially, he went to town on some people with a machete when they caught him doing something exceptionally heinous. So all of that and my commentary here today on the show. And I really appreciate you guys listening. So without further ado, why don't we dive into, another episode of Milk Carton Mysteries. And today, we're going to start off by talking about this woman who allegedly was killed by her husband, whom she called her best friend, during a New Year's Eve argument. I think one could... domestic violence is always something that's terrible. And when it gets to this point, there's no words for it. So what we know is that a Michigan woman who vanished on New Year's Eve has been found murdered, and now her husband is in police custody. And I did see this story when it broke that she went missing. Amanda Hilton, 31 years old, who was last seen alive on New Year's Eve of 2020, sadly was discovered Tuesday behind the Southgate apartment complex where she lived with her husband. This is coming in from Detroit News, and I'm reading off of an Oxygen article. She had been shot in the head, according to WXYZ reports. Now, the Southgate Police Chief Joe Marsh told the outlet on Wednesday that Hilton's husband, 32-year-old Ryan Arthur Hilton, was arrested the same day after being deemed a person of interest. Hilton, this is Ryan Hilton, has now been charged with first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, and 2 counts of felony firearm. So this guy reports her as being missing, and he killed her. Allegedly. I don't even know if I should really. I hate using that word when you know who did it, but you have to still do it. Anyway. Prosecutors believe that he fatally shot his wife with a shotgun following an argument. Then they believe he brought her body to a field with a tall grass behind their apartment and near a dumpster. So, what the hell? He shot her. They found her shot in the head. Okay. And then later on, they say it was with a shotgun. Does she have a head that's left? I mean... I have so many questions. From just a forensic perspective, I have so many questions. If she was shot in the head with a shotgun, was he using buckshot? Was it birdshot? Was it a slug? I mean, what's the apartment look like? How does he clean something like that up? And most importantly, where are the neighbors in any of this? This is what the guy looks like right here. Ryan Hilton looks like a real... piece of work. He's got them dead eyes like he just got busted killing his wife with a shock. Oh no, he did. He absolutely did. The monster, the madman, the maniac. But this is anyway, that's all we really know. Except this little post popped up online that I found. And someone was talking about being friends with Amanda Hilton and in reference to of course Ryan. So she says here, and I blurred out her name, so you know, we don't dox anyone. Saying, I was literally friends with an ex and co-workers with Amanda. And this motherfucker, that's the wording she used. Well, she says MF, but it's a motherfucker. Used to come and sit at our work and watch her every move so she wouldn't talk to dudes or anything. Then on break, scream at her in the car. And that's not uncommon for crazy ass domestic abuse situations where controlling nature of it was something that really led to the situation. Now, looking into the Third Judicial Circuit of Michigan criminal case record search results, we can find out here that Ryan Arthur Hilton, born 11/11/1988, has been charged with homicide, first murder, first degree, premeditated, tampering with evidence, and two charges of weapons felony firearm. He's looking at a long time in jail. Long time in jail. You know, and the saddest thing about this, too, is that the two of them had a kid. I believe the two of them have a daughter. They had a son, or they had another child, and that child unfortunately died. I don't know what led to this argument having taken place, but we can assume, based upon his actions, based upon his response to things, he clearly had a history of at least emotional abuse, mental abuse, or domestic violence. I believe that's pretty fair assessment at this point. And if I have hurt Ryan's feelings in by being wrong, I don't care. I don't think you guys care either, to be honest with you. I don't care. Because he shot this woman in the head with a shotgun, and I'm assuming at relatively point-blank range. Somehow no one heard it in an apartment complex. He was then able to remove her body, drag it behind the apartment complex to where there was tall grass near a dumpster. And then he called the authorities, by the way. He called the authorities to report her missing. In his infinite effing wisdom, he called the authorities to report her missing, then was deemed a suspect, a person of interest, and arrested that day. I haven't seen any report talking about the state of the apartment, but honest to God, this might be one of those ones where it's worth diving into the court records once he goes to trial and is ultimately found guilty and sentenced to life in prison, to look to see what the investigators found. That would be fascinating to me to see, because this is one of those cases where it's like, you can tell he called it in as a way to try to create confusion or create something that would separate himself. Oh, we had a disagreement. She stormed out. They found her body. I don't know what happened, officer. You know, dead by shotgun blast. Pretty easy to tell. Anyway, look, my condolences go to the family 100%. I feel so sorry for the child losing both of their parents in an act like that. And you know, this is one of those things where we need to put a greater emphasis on mental health. And, you know, I can yell about that till the cows come home, and I will frequently on the show do that. But it is a reality of the world we live in where this kind of stuff takes place, and it's sad and it's tragic. And next, you know, why don't we talk about this missing persons case? Because there's a search right now that's continuing in Caldwell County, Texas, for a missing student. And it's a crazy story. Some stuff to me is not quite adding up, but at the same time, I have my own theories. So this is in Lulling, Texas. The search is now continuing for Caldwell County, Texas State student Jason Landry, who went missing in December after a car crash. So this is a couple weeks old, but I'm just now learning about it. I want to bring more emphasis on missing persons cases with this show. Now, the Caldwell County Sheriff's Office circulated a new missing persons poster on social media Friday, which included the most recent picture of Jason taken the same weekend he went missing. This is the missing persons poster. Jason David Landry, last seen Sunday, December 13th, 2020, Lulling, Texas. 21 years old, 6'1", 170 pounds, white/Caucasian, gender identity is male. And people, you know, he's got this kind of a disheveled look going on. Maybe it's a COVID look. A lot of people look a little bit ragged and haggardy in the last year because of this stuff, which makes a lot of sense. Hell, Lord knows I've gained some weight. But this is what he looks like if you're watching this on YouTube. But what we know here is he's been missing since December 13th when he left San Marcos to spend Christmas break in Houston with his family. A gravel road northeast of Lulling is where his wrecked car was found the following Monday. It was spotted reportedly by a first responder who was returning from an unrelated call And then, of course, there was a whole situation with draining a pond behind a church that was nearby that they thought he might have fallen into. And last week, his body was not found in that pond. And the state troopers have turned the case over to Caldwell County authorities. So they are trying to find him. And they thought he might have fallen into a pond and drowned or been dumped there. Who knows? But that didn't happen. So this is what we know. It says in and around the car, law enforcement found his phone, his wallet, and other personal items. They also found a small amount of blood about 900 feet south of the accident. They found some clothing and other personal items in the roadway. Now, he is 6'1", like I said, approximately 170 pounds. He has an olive complexion and a scar on his ankle, medium length brown hair, and he may have a goatee. As evidenced by the pictures are circulating, that's probably what he looks like now. Now, they also say that Jason's family and friends have not seen or heard from him since before the accident, and his whereabouts are currently unknown. Anyone with any information on this is encouraged to contact Detective Ferry with the Caldwell County Sheriff's Office at 512-398-6977. That is 512-398-6677. I'm sorry, 6777, extension 4516. So according to the True Crime Society blog, who they're a great group of gals over there. They do a lot of good investigative work and they help me out quite a bit with my coverage. They've been putting together some stuff here. So if you're looking at this on YouTube, we got images up of what the car looks like. And the car is pretty tore up. Both the front end and the back end are just wrecked. I can only assume that the car spun out after hitting something and then smashed into a tree. It doesn't look like an airbag deployed, at least from this image. So it's really interesting to see just like how bad things were. It looks like he would have survived the crash. Clearly he survived the crash. But the vehicle itself was absolutely FUBAR. And again, the area of where he was found, or the area of where he wrecked, is in the middle of nowhere, effectively. It is on Salt Flat Road out here. And if you're, again, watching this on YouTube, I have some screenshots up, once again, provided by True Crime Society, that talk about, that showcase how just remote this area is. It's flat. It's remote country road. And easy, I guess, maybe to get lost or to hit something, maybe. And it doesn't look like there's a lot around there outside of just some trees and maybe some farmland and, you know, whatever. We don't know. So if this happened at nighttime, then it's entirely possible that he just wandered off into the night. Now, when they looked into his car, they found the keys in the ignition. The vehicle doors were locked, which is weird. And then 100 feet south of the crash location was a black backpack. And inside the backpack, they found his wallet. They found a bag or some kind of item that contained narcotics. And they believe that this was, in fact, Jason's. And this is what the authorities are saying. So they found some narcotics. They're not saying what it is. Is it weed? Is it meth? Is it crack cocaine? Is it MDMA? Is it Molly? We don't know yet. We have no idea. But they're, you know, I mean, obviously, with that information being out there, the speculation becomes, was he impaired when he wrecked this car? Now, interestingly enough, and I'm sure many of you out there know this, if you are physically impaired via alcohol or drugs when you wreck your vehicle, the likelihood of you surviving is higher because your body is more relaxed. You are more limp. And that could be effectively what happened here. He could have gone and been high and he hit something, spun out, wrecked his car, hit his head, and just stumbled away. And where he went, we have literally no idea. So wherever Jason is now, I hope he's alive. It's coming up on 3 weeks. So we don't quite know yet exactly where things are with him. We don't know if he is alive or if he is deceased. The family is looking again. If you know anything about this case, please, please, please say something to the authorities. If you are in that part of Texas, maybe you know something. Maybe there's something here that you might know something about Jason. So again, definitely fill me in. You know, this last one today is an absolute doozy. This is a disgusting story. It's hard for me to get through. It's hard for me to read. So of course, it's going to be difficult for you guys as well. If I have to suffer through it, you have to suffer through it. But this is part of the whole experience of the show, is talking about these these cases, these situations that are absolutely terrible, because the depravity of man is god awful, and this is absolutely no different. Where what we have here is a man alleged to have killed father and stepmother when they attempted to stop a sexual assault. Now, the report starts off by kind of setting the stage. Kenosha police were called to the house at 4:30 a.m. for a report of a possible sex crime and found that the panicked children had run to a neighbor's home for help, with the neighbor having called the police. When officers went into the family's home, they found the parents dead. Police had not realized yet that the had not released the victims' names as of this point. Now, the man in question, the suspect in question, fled to a neighbor's home several blocks away, but was quickly found by police. He was intercepted by a uniformed officer who saw him with the machete in his hands, and the officer describes him as covered with blood. According to the authorities, the suspect attempted to get the officers to shoot him, but they were able to take him into custody without doing so, which is good. He wanted to die by cop, knowing exactly what he had done, knowing exactly who he had killed and what led to that moment. And he wanted to die. And I'm not going to lie, when we go into the details of this, which is what's coming next, I'm kind of right there where I think the cop should have done it because of how fucked up this is. And I know that might not be what you want to hear me to say. I'm not, you know, like, I have opinions, but this is a disgusting individual who did some disgusting things. So according to the authorities, the suspect here told the police that he had intended that night to sexually assault one of his young relatives. The girl slept in the bedroom next to his, and she shared a room with the sibling. He then told the police that he brought a sock with him to keep the girl from being able to make a sound, and a machete in case anyone tried to stop him. See, I think he was planning on murdering everybody. He brought a sock to shove in her mouth to stifle the cries for help and to threaten her with a machete. What did he think was going to happen the next morning? Right? What did he think was going to happen? Now, the girl woke up with the suspect on top of her, saying the only thing she remembers is him saying to shut up. She began to try to call for help, and when she did, he began to strangle her. Her struggles woke up the sibling, who then called out for help like any kid would. Now, this is when the father runs into the room where the assault is taking place. The father yells, "What's going on?" The defendant indicates here, this is the guy, suspect, that nothing is happening. "Hey, Dad, whoa, you got it all wrong. I didn't do anything here. Nothing's going on." But as the defendant says, as soon as he could see that his father did not believe him, he immediately grabbed the machete and he plunged it into his father's stomach. Like, immediately just killed him. Then he struck another blow with the machete, and this one nearly severed his 49-year-old father's arm. The stepmother, who was 36, ran into the room, and the defendant indicated that he jumped over the body of his father and he stabbed the stepmother, and he severed her femoral artery. This is surreal. I'm not even lying to you guys. Like, I've read this before, but it's surreal reading it out loud. But both of the parents, they did the right thing. They did the only thing they could think of. They screamed for the other children to call the police. And they told the kids to flee. Their last act as parents, as protectors, knowing that their life was probably over, still told their children to run. Now, the three elder children fled, climbing out a window and running to a neighbor's house. The six-year-old, the one who was going to be assaulted, who witnessed the vast majority of what happened, had to tell that to law enforcement. The six-year-old, being the subject of a potential sex assault, but then the witness to a double homicide, a brutal murder with machetes, is just insane. Then, of course, the suspect fled the house and ran to a relative's home. And then the parents, who were not dead yet, barricaded themselves in a bedroom where they both ultimately bled out and died. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. It's terrible. It's disgusting. It's god-awful. There are really no more words I can use. There's a lot of words I could say, but I don't want to get booted off of every platform I'm on. This person, this maniac, this psychopath, this monster. Look, the death penalty is hard to argue for in modern society, predominantly because of the cost associated with it. It's like $12 million on average for a death penalty case. I'm not even making that up. It just costs money. It's like $40,000 a year life in prison, $12 million in order to kill somebody. So you can look at the cost situation and go, life in prison would be the best thing just from a taxpayer perspective. But someone like this, knowing what they were effectively able and willing to do in the moment. Like, this is one of those things where, you know, it happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin. If it was Texas, they would have expedited the death penalty. They would have put that thing in the super quick checkout line. But no, I don't know. This person is younger and deserves to spend the rest of his life behind bars, knowing what he did and living with it every day. I do think that is the best call. But it's hard as a parent, and it's hard as a protector of my own daughters, as I'm sure it is for you listening to this, to not immediately want him to just be drawn and cornered and hung from the neck until dead, and then discarded for the wolves to feast on his carcass. I just don't see there be... that is what I would love to have happen. You know? Because it's so depraved. But we live in a society. There's laws, there's rules here. So, life in prison is probably what he's going to get. But they might go death penalty. Who knows? I'll have to see what happens with this. If you know anything more about this story, of course, let me know. I definitely want to hear your thoughts. Well, that wraps up this episode. Of course, that last story is what the hell, right? If you made it this far, I appreciate you. Just know that. I really do appreciate you. And if you guys want to help support the show, if you want to hear more stories like this, which I kind of hope you do, to be honest with you, because it's something I'm trying to do, you know, for like a career, right? Make this more of a Monday to Friday thing. I'm putting a lot of work into it. I'm trying to keep on track. Head over to patreon.com/MattJarboe. Kick down what you can if you can. If not, that's cool too. I just ask that you leave a comment on iTunes or support the show in some way or another. And I'll talk to you guys tomorrow for another set of crazy stuff. Have yourself a great day. Stay safe. Sleep with the lights on. And be wary of anyone wielding a machete. All right, guys, have yourself a good one, and peace out.